Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from Nashville, Tennessee, here in the studios for Faith and Family and Richard Land Live. Richard Lambie, my colleague at Salem Communications. It's a beautiful day here in Nashville, Tennessee, and I hope it's beautiful where you are. Plenty of things for us to talk about today. Let me tell you, the main topic is going to be designer babies. You know about designer handbags, and you can hire a designer to design your home, interior and exterior. We have designer cars. We can pretty much order things the way we want them. And now babies are next. With pre-implantation diagnostic programs that are really screening human embryos, there is now the ability for some couples at some fertility clinics to use tests for some of these genetic traits in order to basically customize what child they will want. Gender, perhaps even other traits, perhaps even things such as eye color. This has been the stuff of science fiction in the past, but it's the stuff of reality right now and also of current controversy. We're going to be talking about it. You'll find a link to this at our website at albertmohler.com in terms of the story, the Wall Street Journal. You'll also find it at our thread at twitter.com. Just sign up to follow Mohler Radio or go to Facebook and find the Albert Mohler Program. You'll find the link there as well. Also a discussion thread. We will be following the course of the program today. It's really scary stuff. We're going to have a very important guest with us at the bottom of the hour who's really watching this from a position of expertise to know what's going on. And she's concerned about it. I share that concern. I think you will, too, because what we're talking about here is transforming what it means to be human when it comes down to how we decide what babies we will and will not accept. And what this really implies about babies as a consumer commodity rather than as gifts from God. We'll be talking about that in just a moment. I'd love to hear from you. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. At my website at albertmohler.com, I posted what I consider to be a very important article, and I did so tonight. I did so last night. You'll find it as you look tonight. It's entitled Christianity and Evolution, Seeing the Problem. Okay, here's what's going on in terms of this issue. You have, with the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin, all kinds of proposals out there about how, well, Christianity and evolution can be reconciled. And I am willing to hear any proposal. But at the end of the day, if you really understand Christianity, argue, and if you really understand evolutionary theory, you can't hold to a biblical paradigm of Christianity, a form of Christianity that holds to, for instance, the inerrancy of Scripture. You can't hold even to what would amount to God's special creation of human beings and do so while simultaneously holding to the dominant theory of evolution. Now, at USA Today, today, there's an interesting op-ed piece that is offered by Pastor Henry G. Brenton of Fairfax Presbyterian Church in Virginia. And I would direct you to my article. It's entitled, again, Christianity and Evolution, Seeing the Problem. It's found at albertmohler.com. Let me read to you what he writes in his column. USA Today, good piece of media real estate. He's got some prominent placement to make his argument. Here's his argument. In my experience, it's best to keep them, that's religion and science, separate and use them to answer two very different sets of questions about creation. How questions and why questions. Science answers the questions of how life has evolved on earth, where religion answers the questions of why there is life. When I open my Bible to Genesis, I don't look for scientific information about the structures of life. I read it as a faith-based explanation of why life exists and why we are to care for it, end quote. Now, he goes on in his argument to suggest that science deals with what he calls things and religion deals with words. In theology, that's called anti-realism, as if theology doesn't deal with real things, real facts, real objects. But in any way, when I read Brenton's argument, it's deja vu all over again, as Yogi Berra ought to say and used to say, because what we're looking at here is the argument that was made by the late Stephen Jay Gould of Harvard University, a paleontologist. He argued for what he called, it's a big term here, non-overlapping magisteria. What did he mean? Magisteria refers to authority, refers there to the fact that science has an authority, Gould said, and religion has an authority, and they don't overlap. And he argued, much like Pastor Brenton here, that science deals with the how questions and theology or religion deals with the why questions. Well, scientists did not take his non-overlapping magisteria argument very seriously, because scientists know that science doesn't stop with the how questions. Science is profoundly driven by the why questions. And anyone who really understands the significance of the questions would understand that you can't neatly separate why and how. Furthermore, if you read the Bible, you'll understand that Genesis, just taken alone, just that one book of the Bible, certainly deals with more than what Pastor Brenton insinuates here. He says, when I open my Bible to Genesis, I don't look for scientific information about the structures of life. I read it as a faith-based explanation of why life exists and why we are to care for it. Well, there's just a whole lot more there. Just to point out that one of the central issues in the book of Genesis is the status of human beings as the only being made in God's image. It's not just a why, it's also a how. Now, when you understand what's really going on in terms of the dominant theory of evolution and what historic biblical Christianity represents, you understand that the current dominant theory of evolution holds that there can be no outside intervention in the process, otherwise you don't have natural selection. So you can't consistently argue that evolution is a fact and that the dominant theory of evolution is true and that God created human beings in his own image. That's absolutely inconsistent. You can only do it by either redefining God or redefining evolution. Now, when someone on the other side makes this case, we ought to pay attention. Writing in the New Republic, Professor Jerry Coyne of the University of Chicago makes that very same argument. He's not writing from my perspective. He is hostile to religion. He is an evolutionary scientist, and he says this. He says the easiest way to harmonize science and religion is simply to redefine one so that it includes the other. Or what you do is you simply redefine your terms, and here I'm paraphrasing his argument, in such a way that God no longer means a personal God, but the way he describes it here, simply the name we give to the order and harmony of the universe. So if you're willing to define God down to being some kind of animating spirit in the universe, then sure, you can have evolution and religion too. But when you look at the serious truth claims made of biblical Christianity, it's hard to see how in the world that can be reconciled with a scientific theory that denies and contradicts what is at the very heart of this. Now, I know there are Christians out there who think they can hold these things together. There are Christians out there who think they can simultaneously affirm evolution in its dominant academic form. I mean, the kind of evolution that a lot of people think they can harmonize just isn't the kind of evolution that's taught in the prestigious American universities today. It's not what is held by the dominant scientists in the field. I mean, every person believes in genetic change. Every person believes in the mutation of species. I mean, just look at dogs. But that does not mean that we accept natural selection as the engine of an evolutionary process that somehow supposedly ended up with the entire biodiversity of this planet, not to mention human beings. This is where Daniel Dennett, one of the four horsemen of the new apocalypse of the new atheism, is very honest to say, look, if you really understand evolution, then we are an accident, a fortuitous accident, but an accident, period. You can't harmonize Genesis with an accident. You can try to argue, by the way, this some do, and this is what's really behind the review article by Jerry Coyne, University of Chicago. You can try to argue that God set it all up in the beginning so that it had to turn out as it did. But that's just not intellectually honest. If God created this process so that it had to turn out as it did, then natural selection is only apparently natural. And you're not going to find a major evolutionary scientist who's going to suggest that it's just apparently natural. Fascinating stuff out there, sometimes missed in the news. I missed this one until it just crossed my desk. Sometime back, we talked about the fact that a Los Angeles Times sports writer changed his identity from male to female. And we talked about that. The man was Mike Penner. And he changed his name to continue as a sports writer at the Los Angeles Times under the name of Christine Daniels. And that was back in April of 2007. He indicated he was going to continue, now as he presented himself as a she, Christine Penner, Daniels, excuse me, was going to continue to write sports, and the newspaper was showing his broad-minded latitude by allowing this reporter to continue. Once a man, now a woman. Well, now he has changed back. You notice I didn't notice a whole lot of attention to this in the media. But the Los Angeles Times has Mike Penner back. He was presenting himself as a man, then as a woman, now back. His editor sent him an upbeat remark. as welcome back. Judging, I'm reading here from a news release. It says, judging by readers' comments in every blog that covered the story, the question on everyone's mind was just exactly what this man, who then was a woman and is now a man again, was supposedly up to. Well, here's the deal. I'm not interested in this as a soap opera, nor would I want to draw attention to this man's situation, other than the fact that he drew attention to it himself by making himself a feature of the media and the fixture on this question. But it demonstrates what happens when you make gender something that you consider to be plastic. You can change it, you can change it, you can change it again. Just try to create a society that can handle that. We'll be back to talk about designer babies on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. You know, we have become addicted to designer commodities in this economy. And when you think about where we are right now, it's clear. You can design your house. You can design your car. You can design and wear designer clothing. You can basically tell people what you want. We're used to ordering off of an extensive menu of choices. When we walk into a car showroom, we expect to be given the ability to choose the color, choose the interior, choose what accessories we want. We are accustomed to getting what we are willing to pay for. That is the moral principle by which, the economy often works. Well, what about when it comes to babies? What if you're not walking into a car showroom, you are walking into a fertility clinic, and once you are in the fertility clinic, you are asked, as a couple, okay, now, what are you looking for? What we have here is the rise of a technology. It's known as pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, PGD. Now, we've talked about this on the program over the last several years. Most urgently, we have discussed this as related to the reality of Down syndrome. For instance, when you use PGD in order to determine that an embryo has Down syndrome or a likely propensity, as they would identify it, for Down syndrome, well, we now know that a good number, almost all of these, are being weeded out. They are being destroyed. They are not being implanted. Of course, this goes on further to where you now have fetal testing, and you've got the abortion of these babies with Down syndrome. Well, PGD has been used until now in fertility clinics primarily to screen out negative characteristics, where, for instance, you would have a baby that or an embryo that we, to use the term so we understand the stage, it is still a human being made in God's image deserving of full protection. But when you look at that embryo, now they're able to say, well, this is a baby embryo that is that has a propensity towards this disease or that disease, cystic fibrosis or Parkinson's disease, or any number of other childhood or adult ailments. One of the ones that is becoming more and more of interest to some physicians is a propensity towards breast cancer with certain genetic strains and markers being identified. The Wall Street Journal ran a very interesting article. Here's the headline. A baby, please. Blonde freckles hold the colic. Here is the subtitle. Laboratory techniques that screen for diseases in embryos are now being offered to create designer children. Okay, designer children. Again, we can understand people that walk into a car dealership expecting to order exactly what they want are going to transfer that consumer morality to the fertility clinic if they have the ability. This has been the stuff of George Orwell and H.G. Wells. This is the kind of stuff Aldous Huxley would have talked about. This is also the kind of stuff that Adolf Hitler would have loved. What if the Third Reich had been given the technology to have only blonde-haired, blue-eyed Nordic babies? It's amazing when you think about what's really going on here. I have to credit the Wall Street Journal with writing a very important article here. Galtung Naik wrote it. This is how she began the article. Want a daughter with blonde hair, green eyes, and pale skin? A Los Angeles clinic says it will soon help couples select both gender and physical traits in a baby when they undergo a form of fertility treatment. The clinic is known as Fertility Institutes. It says it has received half a dozen requests for the service. Now, the rest of this rather extensive article, and I link to it both at Twitter and at Facebook. You'll also find it at the website for albertmiller.com. If you look at this Wall Street Journal article, you're going to see that there is controversy here. Jeff Steinberg, director of the clinic that is advertising this available service, says this is cosmetic medicine. Others are frightened by the criticism, but we have no problems with it. He's just steadfast. He's right up saying, look, I am going to offer this service. We have the technology. Parents have a right to do this, and we have no qualms about it. Others do have qualms. Marcy Davorowski, associate director of the Center for Genetics and Society, says if we're going to produce children who are claimed to be superior because of their particular genes, we risk introducing new sources of discrimination in society. Marcy's going to be our guest in just a few moments on this program. Folks, what we're looking at here is the reality that you're looking at designer children. You are looking at the possibility of parents wanting to design their own children. Now, here's the question. Where would you draw the line? Now, perhaps scandalously for some of you listening, I'm going to draw the line a lot further back than you may think. I'm going to draw the line back to the entire process whereby this research is being done on embryos, because in my view, once you begin down this road, it's very hard to pull back. And what you're looking at is the reality that if parents are given this opportunity, you're not going to be able to hold to any consistent boundary. It's just not going to happen. The boundary is going to be moved all the time. The policy is going to be consistently moving all of the time. And what we're going to have is that it will be negative selection first, then positive selection. Negative selection, parents are going to say, look, we don't want a baby with a propensity to breast cancer. We don't want a baby that has any kind of marker for Down syndrome. We want to screen out X, Y, and Z. But then it moves very quickly, and this is the move that the Wall Street Journal is tracking here. It shifts to the argument where parents say, I want a boy, I don't want a girl. I want a girl, I don't want a boy. I want blonde hair. I want blue eyes. I want these characteristics. Now, the article goes on here to suggest that the number of covered characteristics here is, at this point, relatively few, but it won't last that way. For instance, the data that's included in this article indicates that one test will provide a certain level of probability that the child will have blonde hair or green eyes. It's not yet absolute. The data can be used to analyze the DNA of an embryo and determine whether it is more likely to give rise to a baby of a particular hair, skin, or eye tint. It'd be interesting that they do not have full genetic information to be able to load all these positive traits in. It's not there yet. They do not have adequate information yet on other ethnicities, such as Asians or Africans, because this article says their pigmentation markers for those groups haven't yet been identified by the scientists. But it will happen. And, you know, the Human Genome Project, the entire genetic mapping of humanity, this is well underway. One particular scientist, William Kearns, medical geneticist and director of the Shady Grove Center for Pre-Implantation Genetics in Rockville, Maryland, says that he thinks he's going to be able to crack the problem. He made a presentation at the American Society of Human Genetics back last November in Philadelphia, and without going into the detail, it looks like he is able to go further than, at this point, anyone has yet been able in identifying these traits. But I want to read a paragraph from the story here. It says, Dr. Kern says he is firmly against the idea of using PGD to select non-medical traits. He plans to offer his PGD amplification technique to fertility clinics for medical purposes such as screening for complex disorders, but won't let it be used for physical trait selection. Quote, I am not going to do designer babies, he said. I won't sell my soul for a dollar, end quote. All right, let's think about this for just a moment. Here you have a doctor who clearly has some medical and moral qualms about this whole situation. He is clearly concerned about what this represents. But at the same time, he is very clearly asserting the fact that he intends to make this technology available for what he calls medical screening for medical traits, medical purposes. Well, again, once you start down that line, once you begin to say, we're going to define certain embryos as acceptable and others as unacceptable, then at that point, you're just negotiating with what eventually will be a designer baby. It starts out saying, I don't want this, I don't want that, I don't want the other. Very quickly it becomes, I must have this, I must have that, I must have this as well. I have to tell you, there are an awful lot of dads out there who would have nothing but athletic boys. And there are a lot of folks out there who would want nothing but girls that meet their certain expectations. We'd have nothing but scholars and athletes, and we'd be in big trouble. We'll be right back on the Albert Miller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We're talking about the issue of designer babies, and the Wall Street Journal has written a very interesting article on this. They ran the article just a few days ago, and this is the future come into view here. We've been tracing this issue now for years on this program. We've been watching the shift from negative screening to what we would now call positive trait screening, and now there is a fertility clinic in the Los Angeles area that says it's ready to make a go of it. There are those who are unwilling to go along. I'd love to hear from you. You know where I stand on this. I want to know what you're thinking. Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. With me on the line is Marcy Darnofsky, who is Associate Executive Director of the Center for Genetics and Society in Oakland, California. Ms. Darnofsky, welcome to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thank you very much.
I appreciated your statement in the Wall Street Journal's article. You said if we're going to produce children who are claimed to be superior because of their particular genes, we risk introducing new sources of discrimination in society. Well, at least it certainly is discrimination in the laboratory before we ever get to the society, is it not?
Well, our concern is really that we're going to be introducing classes of people who are thought to be superior or inferior. And, you know, we've worked so hard in our country to overcome that legacy of inequality and discrimination, and to have it now be reintroduced through genetic technologies and reproductive technologies that could be used for good, but we're concerned that instead some people are going to misuse them for exacerbating existing inequalities and creating whole new kinds.
In your work at the Center for Genetics and Society, where would you suggest the boundary should be drawn here?
Well, in terms of embryo screening, it's a really tough call because there's a very blurry line between what you would consider a medical reason and a non-medical reason to make a selection of the kind of child that you want to have. But certain things are very clear. So we think that, as a lot of disability rights advocates have said, that lives are worth living even if by some definitions they're not perfect. And we think certainly selecting the sex of a child just because that's what the parents happen to want is not okay. And in fact, the professional organization of the fertility industry has guidelines that say that its member clinics should not use this embryo screening technology to choose for sex. But this clinic down in Los Angeles and dozens of others openly advertise on the internet that they do just that. So we're calling for the professional organizations to put whatever teeth they can behind their recommendations. And we also think that this is an area for public policy, that unlike so many other countries, the United States does not have much at all in the ways of rules of the road for the assisted reproduction industry. And it's high time that we do. And it's a tough thing to do. We believe, myself and the Center for Genetics and Society, believes that any kind of regulations would have to be carefully crafted so as not to interfere with women's reproductive rights. But we do think that rules, oversight, regulation are necessary at this point.
When you look at this and you face what you must admit is a rather scary future, what's the far side of this? I mean, if there are no limits and no boundaries to put in place, what do you expect to happen?
You know, nobody has a clear crystal ball, but our concern is that we would see more and more of this marketing of different kinds of selection techniques for more and more traits of future children and future generations. And the nightmare scenario is that you would develop what some advocates of this technology have painted as a picture of the future, a world of the so-called gen-rich and the naturals. And, you know, the technology isn't really there at this point, but we could be headed in that direction. And in any case, these technologies are being advertised, and part of what's at stake is what we believe the technologies will create, as well as what they actually can create.
Marcy Darnofsky is Associate Executive Director of the Center for Genetics and Society in Oakland, California. Ms. Darnofsky, thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. She came on short notice, and Ms. Darnofsky added a lot there, just in terms of understanding what's at stake. If you were listening carefully, there was so much there. You know, did you catch that reference to the gen rich, that's the genetically rich, and the naturals as one potential dividing mark for humanity? We're going to be looking at Ms. Darnofsky's comments and add the whole question related to this article in the Wall Street Journal. We come back. Fascinating stuff. I'd love to hear from you. Where would you draw the line? I've already told you I would draw it on the far side. Others, including, I think, those with the Center for Genetics and Society would be somewhere else. How about you? Give me a call, 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We'll be back with the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. This whole idea of designer babies ought to be striking some fear in the heart. And, you know, some very interesting things here. We were listening to Marcy Darnofsky just make some very interesting comments when she was our guest on the program. She's from the Center for Genetics and Society. And, you know, if you listen to her, you know, she's coming from a very different worldview perspective. I mean, first of all, she was so careful to point out that her concern and the concern of her center is not at all to be in conflict with what she calls a woman's reproductive rights. And you see, this is where, again, you get into the deal. You know, I wish I had had a longer conversation with her and perhaps to be able to go back, you know, to some prior questions. But the moment you begin to categorize this in terms of rights, I think you've already lost the argument. And when you talk about a woman's reproductive rights, you know, there you're talking about the fact that they definitely are going to do everything they can to stay from a pro-life argument that's going to have to look at every single embryo as a human being made in the image of God and deserving of full protection, recognizing the sanctity of every life. And again, my argument would be once you are going to get off of that very clear affirmation, then you're just negotiating down all the time. And once you start going into the entire field of human embryos and you start looking at these fertility clinics that are stockpiling embryos and destroying embryos and now experimenting on embryos, then sorting embryos by either positive or negative traits, you know, that's just a hop, skip, and a jump. That is, in a society like this, so easily negotiated and without regulation, and this is the point that Ms. Darnofsky, I think, made very clearly, without regulation, this is an unregulated wild, wild west in terms of genetic and reproductive technologies here. And so you can have groups such as this one in Los Angeles, a firm that says, we're going to do this. We know a lot of people have qualms. We're not scared of it. That's where we stand. Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. In Somerset, Pennsylvania, David's listening on XM170. Go ahead, David.
If we could have designer children, like you're saying, what kind of stress would it put on those children from the parents and society, as far as that goes?
You know, I love the question, David, because here is the logic as I see it. I love your instinct on this. If I go into an auto showroom and I buy a car, let's say that I want an expensive sports sedan. I go in and I say, I want leather seats. I want rack and pinion steering. I want all-wheel drive for slick weather. I want all these kinds of things. I'm willing to pay it. I'm willing to pay whatever it costs. Just get me the car I want. If I get that car and I'm not satisfied, you know what I'm doing. I'm taking that car right back to the dealer, and I'm saying, I paid good money for this car, and look, it is substandard. It's not meeting my expectations. Or you simply say, all right, I didn't get the fulfillment I wanted out of that car. I'm going to switch brands and go to another place and see if I get that fulfillment. Well, what happens when you take that consumer mentality and the commodity is now a child, a human child, and you go to all the trouble? Do you go to a fertility clinic? And you pay all this money and you frankly, you know, skirt the boundaries of all these medical ethical principles and you push for a child that meets your expectations, has all the genetic traits, and this child comes out and doesn't perform? Oh, my. David, I'm with you on this one. You know, children already in this society are held to such unrealistic expectations. Sometimes, by the way, too low, sometimes too high. But we have so confused childhood and adolescence and all the rest that we have all of our categories mixed up. There are too many parents trying to get their own self-esteem through their children. And there are too many parents who are looking at their children as trophies by which they demonstrate their own worth rather than seeing children as inherently worthy because they are gifts from God made in God's own image. When you start adding this idea of the genetically rich, those who are ordered, who are manipulated, who are customized, and they don't live up to expectations. I mean, here's the deal. Let's say, a nightmare scenario for someone in this in terms of cost-benefit analysis, let's say you have a parent that puts thousands of dollars into Little Rhodes Scholar, and Little Rhodes Scholar wants to be a mechanic. He's got the genetic material, according to this scenario, to write his academic ticket, but he actually wants to be a hunting guide in the Rockies. What are you going to do? Talk about risk and return. You see, that just changes the whole way we look at children. And the word the Marxists would use for this, and every once in a while, the Marxists come up with something that's really helpful. The Marxists were concerned. They said, one of the things about capitalism, one of the evils of capitalism is that it commodifies everything. It puts a price on everything. And so it ruins human happiness and depreciates human good by the fact that every laborer is just worth whatever amount of capital he is considered or she is considered worthy of producing. So we commodify everything. And there's some insight in that. Doesn't it all make me a Marxist? But sometimes your critics have a point. That certainly comes clear when we commodify our unborn children. We commodify an embryo. Yes, this is what I want. It's a consumer good now. And it'll change Babies R Us from stuff that sells stuff for babies to a place where, Babies R Us is like, just anything else. It's just for us. You just order your baby the way you want it. Baby's on order. You remember the old commercial, you asked for it, you got it. Have it your way. Well, doesn't work too badly when it comes to hamburgers. But when it comes to babies, it's a completely different matter. We're talking about human beings here. You know, this is where you have a definitional issue. The definitional issue is, what is the moral status of that human embryo? What is the moral status of this child? What is the moral status of this unborn child? If the moral status of that child is not a human being made in God's image, worthy of full protection, then it's just absolutely inevitable that you'll begin to negotiate away whatever protections may prevent this kind of thing. You know, the minute that we as parents, long before there's any genetic technology to make our children into commodities, the minute we begin to see our children in this light, or our prospective children in this light, we've already crossed a kind of spiritual and theological divide. We better get back on the safe side here, folks. And the safe side is recognizing every single human being at every single stage of life as made in the image of God and worthy of protection and worthy of celebration and acceptance. One of the things you heard from Marcy Darnovsky as she was thinking about this is she was saying, the disability experts look at this and very clearly anyone who will be born with a disability on the other side of this kind of screening would just be considered a horrible medical mistake. Who goofed that this happened? Tell that to the millions of Americans loved and adored by their families who will be considered unworthy of coming to life in a world of consumer and commodified infants. Children by choice, designer babies, that's the future if we don't stop it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Miller Program. Important conversation. We're going to try to get two final callers here. Michael's calling from State College, Pennsylvania, listening on WTLR. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, Dr. Mueller, I just wanted to say, if we could choose our kids and the way they look, and what if I'm that kid and I grow up, and let's just say in puberty, I don't really like the way I look, I'm going to want to blame my parents, and it kind of takes God out of the picture. I can pin it on my parents, and what are they going to say, God chose you that way, when really it was them, and, kind of take God out of the picture. I think that would cause a little bit of a problem.
Michael, that's a side I hadn't thought of before, and you're exactly right. What if the kid says, look, why did you order me this way? you know, this is your fault. I hadn't even thought of that angle, Michael. That's great. And, I mean, it's haunting, but it's great that you saw it. Because, boy, I could really see that happening, too. Or what happens when the kid's disobedient and the parent is upset and the kid says, look, you ordered me this way. This is your fault. That's a macabre scenario. And I could certainly see it that way. And I like the way Michael said, you know, it really moves the decision about the child's identity and all the rest from God to parents. And that's a very dangerous thing. Thank you for your call, Michael. Great point. Let's go to Karen calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Listen on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Karen.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. I know that genetic traits such as athletic prowess and intelligence have been identified, but has science identified a kindness gene? Is there any way to select a kind child?
You know, at this point, there is not, because what you're looking at here are traits that have more to do with physical characteristics. But, Karen, that's coming. And as a matter of fact, right at the very same time this article appeared in the Wall Street Journal, other articles are appearing in the scientific literature just last week indicating that there are those who are trying to press the argument that they have found genetic markers for religiosity, genetic markers for altruism, and that's where your kindness comes in. So, you know, maybe it's not long until they do have what they consider to be the possibility of screening for a kind child. You know, the very interesting argument there, and I guess the question, Karen, is I wonder how many parents would choose kindness when maybe they would rather choose athletic ability, or they might choose intellectual ability. You know, when you start trying to design a master race, just think of how horribly immoral that entire enterprise is. And once you start down that line, you realize you're really going to find out what you value as a society, and you're going to choose this rather than that. That's where I think Nietzsche, the 19th century philosopher, is going to smile on the whole effort from the grave. Yeah, you're going to create a super race. Let me tell you what it's going to come down to. It's going to come down to a super race of the powerful over the powerless. I don't think the kind, well, let's put it this way. They're going to inherit the earth according to the Beatitudes. I don't think they'll inherit by genetic screening. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks to the folks here in Nashville, Tennessee at Richard Land Live. We'll see you tomorrow on the Albert Miller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Moeller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.